This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
All right, let's take another deep dive into the land of psychology, deception, and criminal behavior. Because this case just got even weirder than we expected it to. The defense in the Brian Koberger trial just dropped a bombshell saying he was framed. That's right, according to them, someone planted the DNA on the knife sheath at the scene of the crime. Which means we've got a new question on our hands. Is this a Hail Mary legal strategy, or could someone have actually orchestrated a setup this elaborate? Here to break it down, Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Robin, you've spent decades analyzing human behavior. When you hear cover-up or frame-up in a claim like this, what's the first thing that goes through your mind? Like, what's the psychology behind trying to sell this type of defense?
You know, it's funny, Tony, the number of times we've covered cases where someone's claiming they were framed, it's never once been the case. It's very, very rare for that to happen because the amount of time, effort, and resources it takes to do that, you have to look at the motivation behind someone, why someone would want to do that. And we're not seeing the connectivity on that one. And also, and I get the point. Once again, defense attorney is doing a great job of trying to sow seeds of doubt to save his life. And so if you took this incident isolated and said with two things. Mm-hmm. So a couple weeks ago, they said we have other DNA that was found there in the glove and under the fingernails of one of the victims.
Yep.
Now we have the theory of the knife sheath was planted because it's a cover-up. So if you just took those two data points by themselves, you know, you can say, huh, maybe it wasn't Koberger. Mm-hmm. Except for the fact that we have cell phone triangulation, we have him in the area, we got him traveling cross-country with his dad acting really weird with two car stops, and then we actually have him packaging up all his trash in baggies in the middle of the morning as the police is barging down the door as he's putting the trash in the neighbor's next door trash cans.
Yeah, with gloves on.
And those just a few things that we know about. So
exactly.
This is not a big deal. This is, again, a Hail Mary. Like I said, it's a Hail Mary trying to save a life by not having a jury go 100%. All of them 100% convinced beyond a reasonable doubt.
It's a big shift. And I mean, if it even makes it into the trial, we will see. Because if it does make it in, I mean, we've bounced from so many different theories here on Koberger. Now, essentially by saying it was planted, they're acknowledging that it's his DNA. They're not, I mean, before it was, well, the science is not that great. Maybe it could be this. Maybe now, okay, you got us. This is DNA, but it was planted. It can't be very easy to plant touch DNA, especially the way that they found it. It wasn't like it was, like you have it on something and they smeared it around like on the sheath somewhere where like, okay, well, you got it on there. I mean, this is in a very specific spot, the spot where one would logically leave touch DNA because you have to apply a lot of pressure with your thumb or whatever finger you're using to snap that button. And it's right there where one would expect that to be.
And here's something else that allows that to fall apart.
Yeah.
Is the fact that also where the knife sheath was found was under one of the victims. Mm-hmm. And so think about this. Do the thought experiment. All right, so I'm the person that's actually the murderer, and I was intentionally thinking I'm going to leave this to frame Brian Koberger. And where would you think of leaving it? You're going to want to leave it, even if I had enough information. Granted, I never was that clear on touch DNA and how easy it was to get until mm-hmm. this. So if you're actually going to plant evidence, you wouldn't be planting one cell of touch DNA on a knife sheath. You'd be going for something much bigger, like blood in a glove, like something a little bit more obvious, because you want it to be so plainly obvious that's Koberger that you wouldn't leave a touch DNA molecule on a thumbprint, you know, on a knife sheath snap underneath the body that you've killed that's covered in blood.
It seems like quite a stretch to do that. And yeah, I would think you would have number one, how would you collect it? And then how would you even be sure that it's there? Because it's touch DNA. It's not like it's not like blood where you can see it and go, okay, this is here. We've spread this around the crime scene. And you'd think you'd put it in more than one place if you're planting it to really make sure that you framed Brian Koberger for this quadruple homicide. But that's not really what happened. I ran through my mind. If he really wanted to get off on this, he should have cut one of his fingers off. Like, oh shit, I left the sheath. Let's chop a finger off, throw it away, get rid of it, and then claim somebody broke into my house and cut my finger off. So,
about this too.
Oh,
if you really wanted to frame him, why wouldn't you leave the knife?
Yes. There's so many other ways.
Yeah.
And why would you frame him? Why would anyone go to this length to frame Brian Koberger of all people? And it wasn't like this is like a 5-year cold case and suddenly, oh, this new evidence is right here that we didn't ever realize was there before. No, this happened all pretty quickly. So they'd have to be like right away, right off the bat going, okay, these four college kids, we're going to kill them and we're going to frame this other guy in the town next door for it. There's no motive here. There's no reason why this would even take place. And if you're going to kill those kids, I don't think you're thinking far enough ahead or really have the means again to frame anyone in this, especially Brian Koberger of all people.
So it brings us to our next thought experiment with this one is, like you're saying, you know, so in order to say he was framed, well, then we have to have a plausible individual, just even a biography of or a profile of someone that would do that. And a profile of someone would do this would be someone who is so vengeful against Koberger that they'd want to frame him. And then also someone that actually would there'd have to be connectivity between the girls, or at least one of them, and the actual perpetrator, since there wasn't a connection between Koberger and the girls that we know of yet. And so since it'd be a stretch, the murder would actually have to be connected to girls in some way, which they've explored all of that already and couldn't come up with anyone. And then not just there'd have to be a connection, you'd actually have to show a behavior arc of this individual that they're actually escalating from 0 1 mile an hour at a time all the way up to eventual violence and then killing, and then also show the propensity for framing. In other words, there'd be someone with a lot of potentially illegal activity that they've already done in their life, violence in their lives, that would be arcing up to doing this behavior that's already connected to the girls.
Yeah. Again, so, I mean, none of it makes any sense of why.
It's a lot of it. People don't do that because that's a lot of bandwidth, a lot of effort, and all that falls apart.
Yeah, I think you just, if you were to go in and do this and it wasn't Koberger, you would just kind of go for there's no evidence of anyone, not that there's evidence of someone else or very, you know, just the touch DNA alone. It does. And then you'd have to have a reason to be killing four innocent people as well and a motive to frame Brian Koberger for that murder.
I really think she's just going for the life save of to as she's been doing with the autism attempt, as she's been doing with everything, is to try to pull on heartstrings of at least one juror that's going to have doubt. And, or if not doubt, at least a heart-wrenching pull that's of, you know, I don't want to take this life. Not you know, the whole idea of just because these lives are gone doesn't mean we should take another one. I literally think that's what her motive is.
And at this point, what else do you do if you don't really have anything else? And there is, you know, the court of public opinion that's trying to be won here on both sides. I really wonder what's going on in these conversations behind closed doors between Ann Taylor and Brian Koberger. Do you think Koberger knows he's cooked too? Do you think he's just like, whatever, we can try, you know, let's just see where it goes? Or is he, you know, do you think Koberger is of the mindset almost like a Lori Vallow Daybell that whatever he did was justified in some way, shape or form? He's not guilty because, you know, in like Lori Vallow's case, she believed that they're zombies. And so then in her mind, she wasn't taking a human life. In this case, I don't believe that he would think that they're zombies, although I guess I'd open for anything, but I would think it's more so it's justified because he was rejected, and you get that whole incel type thinking going on where it's a, you deserve this because you rejected me, and it's a broader statement against all women.
You know, I don't think he's trying to rationalize his behavior or what he did or didn't do. You know, I'm just doing my best to place myself in that situation with both of them. I don't think they probably, again, pure conjecture, I don't get the impression from both of their mannerisms that they have actually ever explored the question of whether he did it or not.
Yeah.
I think just, again, watching the dynamic and watching the things that are coming out that she's posting out there as these postulates is that all they do when they get together is brainstorm ideas. I literally think that they get in there and she goes, oh, all right, tell me some more about this. Tell me some more about this. Tell me about, and she comes up with an idea and then he helps feed that with other data points. I literally think all they do is brainstorm when they get together, brainstorm about how it could potentially not be him. Not that it's ever even been asked or discussed. You don't know what's going on behind closed doors between client and the attorney, but because of what they come out with and because of their nonverbal demeanor is very pragmatic approach. It's very systematic with every time it looks like something's not sticking, they come up with they go behind the closed door again, they come up with another idea, they brainstorm it, they get all the energy, the synergy of the two of them together, and they come out with this one. Mm-hmm. So since he's not very emotional, doesn't seem to be very he's just really, really rationally attacking every problem that he faces, it looks like. And I think that's all that's going on here. I don't think he's trying to rationalize his behavior. I think he's just trying to help her rationalize it away for a jury.
Do you think, let's assume it's him for a moment, obviously innocent till proven guilty. Do you think he's surprised that his ideas suck? early on going into this, you know, I'm sure he thought, okay, this is going to be the perfect crime until he leaves a knife sheath. Then they find him. And one would have to assume that if you're going to murder four people, you may have it run through your mind that at some point you may be caught. So you probably need some alibis. And it seems, you know, he didn't think that part very through, or he thought his ideas were so good that no, who's going to question this? This seems totally reasonable. I like to go for drives at night. Who doesn't? I like to look at the stars. That seems plausible. Or that someone planted this. I can just imagine that there's 1,000 ideas running through his head that let's say this, which is kind of troubling as well, considering he was a criminology PhD student. I know, everybody thinks he's so smart. I don't know that he was very smart at any of this, considering what's coming out and the arguments that are being made.
So I think he didn't have a plan B. As I've said from the very beginning, he struck me as someone who actually performed and created the best science experiments with everything he had for his final test paper in school and handed it in. Not having a plan B because he thought he got 100. He thought he aced this thing. He thought he got an A because, again, and we've said this, absent the touch DNA on that knife sheath, this would never be here.
Yeah.
I do not think. And so he did that good of a job. And I think where he really, again, assuming it's him.
Yeah.
Whoever this is, the real true mastery here was the lack of blood evidence anywhere on him, his apartment, his vehicle, all that. The lack of any DNA from any one of the victims in all those areas is really the genius that he had. That took a lot. I'm still just dumbfounded by that as well. And I know they are as well. No weapon, no clothing, and no DNA from any of the victims were ever found, at least that we've seen yet, and it doesn't look like there is. So absent that touch DNA on the knife sheath, he got an A.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I think he didn't have a... So again, this goes to his lack of reps.
Yeah.
And he had education without doing it.
Yeah.
That's where he failed. He did not have plan B ready for alibis. I think she's the one coming up with plan B.
Could be. I mean, you got to assume he's trying to figure out, something to go with whatever she's coming up with. But maybe he's just He doesn't have it. And, you know, can it go too far, though, with these claims? Because we've heard so many now from Ann Taylor of, you know, it's been planted. It's he has on the autism spectrum. It's this. It's that. It's everything. At some point, could that not just backfire, especially for the local folks who four college kids in this small town were murdered? I mean, that's a big deal. People are going to have a lot of empathy for those kids. They do. And this attorney is coming in and going, what about this? What about that? Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that. And it's she is not sticking to one solid, you know, theory here. It's like everything is being thrown out. At some point, that's just got to anger people. I mean, I know it angers the family. You know, Steve Gonsalves, I know, is very frustrated by all of this. And I get Ann Taylor has to do her job. She's going to throw everything out there. But at what point is it more damaging than it is helpful by throwing out these sort of theories?
I'm thinking it's at that point right now.
Yeah.
Because she's not doubling down on anything, any of these other alternate theories. And so let's just do a compare and contrast to Delphi. Richard Allen's two attorneys, they came up with Odinism and they doubled down until the judge didn't allow them to do it. They were all in. They were all in on an alternate person the entire time. They didn't have an alternate theory on anything. They just kept doubling down on their one. Granted, you know, my belief on this, and I know many others, is that he didn't do it anyway. So it's easier to do that, I think.
Yeah.
But they didn't try to keep throwing stuff at the wall. I never got the impression of it. They had their theory that it wasn't him. It was someone else. And from the get-go, they stuck to their guns on. Now, they kept trying to figure out how, why, where, who along that same circle. But they had that alternate thing and a framing from the very get-go.
Yeah.
And so this one, Ann Taylor, she keeps throwing something at the wall. If it doesn't seem to stick, she goes for another one. And eventually, when you cry wolf too much, everyone just says, nah, you're just full of it. You're trying too hard.
You know, or is it, you know, we pay attention to this on a crazy level because we cover it. The average person, you know, unless you're a family member, probably doesn't. So it all kind of goes out into the ether of all these things. So I'm wondering if, you know, we overthink it a bit too much because we can identify all of these shifts in direction. But maybe that is just part of the strategy. Have all those shifts out there. The average person's not going to realize that it's shifts. They're just going to think of it as, well, look at all these things. I heard this. I heard that. Not realizing that they're all being shut down one after another.
And she could be just socializing these ideas out there as well to see which one has the most traction. And that's the one she's going to go with harder during a trial. I mean, there's, again, I don't take anything away from Ann Taylor. Again, if anyone ever had someone in their family do something that was unsavory, hire her.
Yeah, she'll definitely go to work for you and get it get some ideas out there. His behavior in court, very, you know, as we've continued to see, very just calm. You know, we don't see much emotion. It's not a Donna Adelson where, you know, you get the shots left and right of all these reactive. Everybody reacts differently in court. Is there a right or wrong way to be reacting when you're being tried for something to play to a jury if you want to be found innocent? And is he doing it?
You know, there's a lot of things that go into courtroom and your appearance in the courtroom. And there's a lot of people that'll coach on courtroom appearance, what you should do, not do. I mean, just look at Alec Murdaugh and how he had the fake tears and how flat that fell and how obvious that was. You know, someone once gave me some great advice when I was in a Marine Corps and when I was about to give a big talk in front of a bunch of recruits at Parris Island. And I said, how should I be? And they said, just be who you are. They'll see you through anything else. It would be great to be able to tell him, hey, you need to have more emotion. You need to show how you're moved by this. But at this point, since there's been so much focus on him, if he did anything but be who he is, it's going to look very disingenuous and very fake. So I'm sure his attorney would love him to show sadness, remorse, not necessarily remorse that he did it, but remorse over the loss of lives and that and how tragic that is. But think about this. How incongruent at this point from how much we've seen in him would that be from his baseline behavior? It'd be massive. It would look like a total fake. So I think at this point, he's just got to be him.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. The thing is about his behavior, his lack of emotion plays, I think, more into guilt of someone's looking at this and thinking about it psychologically because you go, oh, like he doesn't emote. He doesn't have emotions or is very, very shallow or low on them. And that would certainly be someone who could be a candidate to pull off a crime like this. If you're not feeling any emotions about it and you can just handle it like you're ordering, you know, a Big Mac or you're slicing a steak and it's for college kids. Yeah, that kind of makes a little bit more sense. Doesn't necessarily play in his direction for as much of a genius as he thinks he is. Yeah, so that's the latest. We have the it was planted now going full on OJ. What's next? What do you think we're going to see next in this as we get a little bit closer to trial? There's still plenty of time.
I don't know. You know, I never would have thought on that one either. We'll see.
I'm wondering if Diddy can get involved in some way, shape, or form in this.
Oh, my God.
I know. Anything is possible.
They're all related.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.